Produced by Jeffrey Cresselius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier, and Wayne Hall. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 464. Arc of Life, First Impressions.
This is Bill Bruford, the ever-enthusiastic young drummer from the group Yes, and you're listening to the Yes Music Podcast.
Welcome to episode 464 of the Yes Music Podcast, two fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will be along in a little bit. Please do get involved with the podcast yourself at any time via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. This week, Mark and I have had the chance to listen to the whole of the new Arc of Life album, so listen out in a few minutes for our initial reactions to that. We also have had time to think about a twopence suggested by Jeremy North, and I need to correct an omission from last week when we played Daniel and Amanda's contribution to the What If Rick Wakeman Had Joined Yes Before the Yes album question, but we didn't have time to add any feedback. My comments are as follows. I agree that Rick would have added a lot more lead keyboard work than Tony Kay would, and this would certainly have changed the whole feel of the album. I also agree with Amanda that the Mellotron from Rick would have been a great addition. I'd have liked a solo keyboard piece on this album alongside Clap, but I'm not sure that the idea was around at this stage. On Starship Trooper, I'd like to have studio versions of both guys adding their unique styles to it. So I agree with you both. And I'm also a fan of Avenger, and I wouldn't like to see it being altered in any way apart from always existing in this Stephen Wilson full version. So many thanks once again to Daniel and Amanda, and also everyone who sent in their contributions last week. A very brief rush through the social webs brings us on the YMP Facebook page, Preston Frazier's Best 2020, which includes The Red Planet by Rick Wakeman, amongst many other interesting choices. And Preston also reviews Words on a Page from a Page, which he and I agree is a wonderful piece. I posted Steve Cavalli's birthday wishes to Trevor Rabin, and as you'll hear later, Arc of Life released their second single, Just In Sight. In the community posts, Tim Stannard was watching Rick Wakeman on an audience with Jimmy Tarbuck, a name I imagine you won't know unless you live in the UK. And Tim tells us that the playout song was a version of Johnny B. Goode, featuring Rick, along with Justin Hayward, John Lodge, Hank Marvin and Kenny Jones, with Tarbuck sharing vocals and playing a mean tambourine. Wow. Now it's time for Jeffrey Mason's list. Notification that fellow progressive rock fan Paul Watson is the guest programmer for the new episode of Yes Sounds, with almost 2.5 hours of great Yes and Yes-related music. Steve Howe on Johnny Walker's Rock Show, John Anderson on Mitch LaFon's show, Youngblood, Rick Wakeman and assorted other people doing Life on Mars on Sunday the 10th of January 2021 during the Just for One Day tribute charity concert, and the March 1972 issue of Phonograph Record magazine, courtesy of the Groovy Archives. Doug Curran added another happy birthday to Trev, with his photo of him backstage in 2016. Gary Andrews sent me a video which features John Anderson from Battles. It's well worth a look, and I've embedded it into the show notes for this week. He also sent me one about the guy who visited every train station in the UK. I haven't included it, but it's out there if you're interested. Finally, Preston sent me the advert for the limited edition triple blue vinyl of House of Yes. I'm not sure I can afford this one, but thank you anyway, Preston. And thank you to everyone who's been in touch in any way this week.
Olá, sou o Miguel Falcão, de Coimbra, Portugal. Estão a ouvir o Yes Music Podcast.
Mark is here with me now for some first impressions of the Arc of Life album. Hello, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, thank you very much. What about yourself?
Not too bad. We're going under a state of emergency here, so even more time at home will be required.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Well, more time to listen to and enjoy Arc of Life, the album, maybe. So we've had a streaming advanced copy of this, so we've heard the whole thing now. And generally, we start off talking about the album and then eventually come to our sort of conclusion. But I'd like to do it the way around today. Overall, were your first impressions of the album? Not mentioning any songs particularly, but just overall.
Well, right away, my first impression was I thought that it was a well-produced record. It sounds good. You know, it has that Billy Sherwood touch to it. I'm starting to get the, you know, that feel of whenever he makes a record, he has certain elements in his production that you can pick out. That's there. I mean, it's a good record, but I mean, as a first impression, I thought it wasn't too bad. I mean, I'm sure we'll go into a bit more detail after you give your first impression.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, not too bad, says Mark. Well, I think there are some great aspects to the album, and I think perhaps it's too long, but we will come to that in a minute. I think there are some definite high points and some very nice production, as you say. It sounds very nice indeed over my headphones here. So just to remind you, this is the first piece of music, full piece of music that we've had from Arc of Life, who consist of Billy Sherwood on bass and vocals, John Davison on vocals, Jay Shellen on drums, Jimmy Horn on guitars, and Dave Kersner on keyboards. Okay, so yeah, I think a lot of it is very finely crafted, and I think there's a mix of some progressive elements and some pretty straight-ahead rock that you would, I suppose, expect from someone like Billy Sherwood, who seems to be one of the main driving forces behind this band and this album. There are 10 songs, and two of the songs are well over 9 minutes long, and I totaled up the whole running time of the album, Mark, and it came to 57 minutes and 19 seconds. Now, if you compare that with some Yes albums, Close to the Edge is 38 minutes and 42, Going for the One is 38 minutes and 49, Fly From Here is 47 minutes and 28, Tales, that's of course a double album as we know, is 81 minutes and 14 seconds. So for this debut, basically it's an hour of music. Do you think it's the right length? Too long? What do you think?
Well, as people probably know from listening to me talk about stuff like this in the past, I'm always been a fan of the 40 to 45 minute album. I always think that's the perfect time. It's the perfect for a vinyl release. Overall, I think it's the perfect length. When you start getting into records that are an hour long, I do find you start losing people after a while. Once you start getting past the 40-minute mark, you start, you know, getting people getting a little restless.
Yeah.
I mean, unless it's like a really, really like standout record, you know what I mean? Mm. Now, that's not to say this isn't a good record. I'm just saying that as a debut, I think I might have made it a bit shorter.
Yeah, and I think you're right, because I can't really listen to it end to end in one sitting, and that's not because of the quality of the music. I think that it really is because as you say, an hour long, and also the two long songs, so Locked Down, which I think is very, very good, and Therefore We Are, which I think is not quite as good, are right next to each other. So once you've got through and enjoyed Lockdown for 9 minutes and 45, you'll then launch straight into another one. So I'm just wondering if that was the right sequence in which to put them. Do you have any specific songs, though, on the album, Mark, that you would have left out?
Yes, there's a couple that I think I would have left out for certain reasons, I think. The single, You Make It Real, that's it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I was never really into that. I actually said when we first talked about that when it first came out that it was not a song that appealed to me. I didn't think that it was a good first single, but it's a good song, but I don't think it was a strong single from this record. Also, Talking with Siri, I don't like. I think it's very sort of cliche. It's very a song that 5 years from now, I think Billy might kind of slap his forehead and go, what was I thinking with this one? Because it very much pegs him in a time period where, you know, 20 years from now, it's going to just seem like, you know, like there's a band I remember that put out an album that had a song talking about, like, you know, cyberspace, and they actually had like a dial-up modem song, like sound on it, like those old things. And it's so dated, the song, because of that, you know?
Yeah.
And I think this whole Talking with Siri, like Siri is a very now thing, like 2020 thing. So I think it might just kind of pigeonhole it in that period because of that. But other than that, I mean, I'll get into more detail after, but those are the two I would kind of knockout.
Yeah, interesting. I initially thought it was a silly idea talking with Siri, but I quite like the song itself. It's fun and there's some engaging ideas and, you know, a really great guitar solo and so on. But yeah, we'll come back to one or two of the songs in a moment. So as with something like Open Your Eyes, I find that it's quite dense. And as with something like Conspiracy as well, which won't be a surprise because that was a Chris Squire and Billy Sherwood project, of course, he does tend to go for the dense sound and highly produced and very, very well produced. But if you think about some other epics that Yes have done in the past, something like Endless Dream that I was listening to in the Chile recording or watching on YouTube just recently, or Awaken or Tales, or, you know, all those ones that are the classic epics, Gates of Delirium, etc. There's always a sense of space and time, and that's the way that it's epic. That's the way in which it's epic. And there's a lot of contrast between frenetic sections, which are dense, and other sections, which are very calm, and there's lots of perhaps just solo piano and voice, etc. This doesn't seem to have that sense of space for me. Do you think that's a fair comment?
Yeah, I think it's fair. I mean, obviously, like you said, Billy definitely has a sort of style now that we're all starting to pick up on as far as production and how he makes records. I'm going to go a step further, and I really hope this isn't going to come across as too controversial in my opinion, but I think my whole problem with this record overall is that it's very safe. When I was expecting to hear Arc of Life to come out with these people, I was expecting to hear something more along the lines of like a prog collective record, where it's a little bit more daring. There were some chances taken, some interesting time changes, and some parts that come out of left field. This is very not progressive in that light. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is a very kind of safe record, I find. And I mean, I really don't want anybody to take that the wrong way or think I'm trying to be insultive, but I just think that they're almost being too cautious. I mean, these guys are all fantastic players. Mm-hmm. These guys are all people who can, you know, do and play almost anything, I think. And I think they kind of played it a little too safe with this record. I think they needed to take a little bit more chances. I mean, let me refer to you to something like this. John Anderson's record, Survival and Other Stories. Oh, yeah. He had a bunch of unknown writers write with him. And some of those songs I find are pretty inventive and exciting. Some of them, you know, are definitely taking chances and just trying things out of left field. And that keeps my attention. If you're going to put out a 60-minute album, after a while, some of this stuff starts to sound a little samey to me after a while. Mm. And it just doesn't catch my attention. Like a song, like, for example, you mentioned like Close to the Edge and that. What's the difference between albums like that and this? There's all kinds of different changes. There's complete stops where it drops down to just organ and a voice, or it comes back up and there's like some crazy 2.5 minute part where there's all kinds of crazy interplay between guitar and bass and drums. Those things are missing, I find, from this. This is very much a straight ahead sort of rock record almost with progressive touches in it. I mean, am I wrong or?
No, I couldn't agree with you more, actually. I think it is. Now, that doesn't mean to say that I think it's a bad record. It isn't. I think it's a very good record. And I think if it had been pruned, I would think, and, you know, the right songs left in, I think it would be a really fine first album from the band. But yes, I can see entirely where you're coming from there. One or two things I wanted to ask you about also that have been mentioned in social media, etc. Quite a few people have complained about auto-tune. Now, I'm obviously not very attuned to that because if nobody had mentioned it, I wouldn't have thought, that's been auto-tuned and it sounds a bit fake there. Is that something that popped out to you?
Not really. I mean, look, I've used auto-tune before on stuff. I've had to use it plenty of times on other bands when I've done mixing and stuff like that because the singing wasn't maybe up to par. But these guys are all good singers. Mm. if the auto-tune is used in this, I think it's used more for effect than rather than, oh, he didn't sing it well, because I guarantee you they would just sing it until they get it correct. And in the studio, you can do that 1,000 times until you get it correct. So I think if the auto-tune is in there, and, you know, yeah, there are elements in it here, maybe a little bit in talking with Siri, but that, again, would have been probably used to get the effect of a computerized sort of feel to it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I really think that it's being used more for effect than it is for being, you know, covering up, you know, somebody who's not quite as skilled as they should be, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what I think. I mean, it doesn't jump out to me. I mean, we're not talking about, like, you know, a Cher record here, you know, where she completely, you know, auto-tuned herself, like, to death. I don't find anything of that nature on this.
No, no. I didn't notice any either, but certainly if you're looking out for that, then maybe you did, and let us know in the comments for this episode where you have heard it. Now, going back to the singles, You Make It Real, I like that as a single. I know you don't, but that's fair enough. And I thought another song on this album which would be a good single was I Want to Know You Better. Again, there's nothing progressive about that one, about either of those two, but I think they're good songwriting. And interesting that Billy takes the main vocals in both of those. But in fact, today they have released Just In Sight as the second single from the album, which I think is fascinating. And it's a bit more progressive in that it's got some interesting time signatures, a 7/4 bit, an electric guitar solo, which I think channels Steve Howe, and some great bass guitar from Billy. So what did you think of Just In Sight?
Yeah, I mean, I like that song. I mean, I found that interesting, too, because when I was going through my YouTube this morning, when I was looking for certain things, I just saw it said 4 hours ago, Arc of yeah. Life, Just In Sight, official audio was released. And I was like, wow, that's an interesting song to have chosen.
Yeah.
I think it's a good song. It's definitely one of those ones that kept my attention a lot more than some of the other ones on there. And, you know, it has elements of it that I find appealing. Like, Billy tends to like to use that Chris Squire sort of Tormato-ish bass where it has that kind of effect and that almost like that kind of harmonizing to it in it. Mm-hmm. And whenever he goes to those kind of sounds on his bass, I find it appealing because it does give me kind of a feel of Yes to it a bit. And there's where the progressive element starts coming back into their music. So, yeah, I think it's not a bad selection for a single. I definitely like it better than the first one, to be quite honest, because I think the first one, again, goes back to my statement of it being a little too safe.
Yeah, yeah. And fascinating that we get those two singles with Billy taking the lead vocal part. Fascinating. How much of the album do you think is Billy, and how much do you think is the actual other members of the band?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I'll tell you why, because Billy can pretty much do everything on this record himself. He can drum. He's an excellent drummer. I mean, if you don't believe that, just listen to Days Between Stations, that album that he produced. He drummed on it and played bass and everything and sang. I mean, it's incredible what he can do. He can play keys, he can play guitar, bass. So, I mean, if he wanted to, he could have did this whole record. But I definitely think there's lots of Jay Sheldon. Mm-hmm. There's lots of Jimmy Hahn for sure on guitar on this. I mean, that I can pick out right away. Dave Kirzner, to me, I don't think there's as much of him on there, because from the records that I've heard of him and the stuff that he's done, he does seem a little bit more adventurous in some of his stuff. And I think maybe some of the keys that are on here kind of sound more like Billy keys than, you know,
yeah,
Dave Kirzner keys, but I could be wrong. And obviously, you know, we have John on here, and you know, he's very obvious where he is. I mean, he does a lot of backing vocals on this record,
yes,
much more than lead. And but, you know, he has enough. I think he has some good lead vocal stuff on here as well.
Yeah, I mean, after all, he sings lead vocals on both of the very long songs. It's an interesting parallel, I thought, to when Trevor Rabin came into the band. And Billy, in the same way as Trevor, seems to be in control of this album. And as you say, I think one of the missing elements for me is any kind of prog, what we would describe as progressive rock style keyboard on it, as you've just said, with Dave Kirsner, not particularly that. I mean, there aren't really any full keyboard solos, I don't think, that I can remember at the moment.
Yeah.
There's plenty of keyboards, but they're mainly in a sort of supportive manner. And one of the things that I love about Yes and their progressive works is the sharing of responsibility around the band, and every member is an equal member of the band. And it doesn't feel as if Dave is as much in control of what's going on in the keyboards as others are with their instruments. And he said as much, didn't he, on the press release. He said that he was looking forward to being more involved with the writing and the putting together of the record. So it'd be fascinating to ask him, you know, at what point he came into the project. But I want to stress that there's a lot of music on here that I really do like, and there's a lot of it which does have some very interesting textures in the way it's been put together. For example, Locked Down, I think, is a great epic. And, you know, you've got Billy's counterpoint vocals in there. You've got interesting time signatures. You've got some quite Yes Choir elements to it, like the opening, and some epic guitar soloing as well, and some really fantastic bass lines. And at one point, I don't know if you noticed it as well as me in that song, Billy's bass line, I thought, was very reminiscent of Safe, Canon Song from Fish Out of Water. Mm. And, you know, throughout this album, you can hear the towering presence of Chris Squire, can't you?
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely parts in a lot of these songs where I found that they were tipping the hat to Yes and stuff like that. You know, I think the whole thing with this album is it's not a bad record at all. It's good. But like I said, the two things that I think stand out to me is that there's just not enough of that stuff that make a record jump out as progressive. Like I said, there's no Moog keyboard solos. There's no, it doesn't even have to be a Moog, but just like a keyboard solo section at all. There's no crazy sort of interplay stuff. And I mean, you know, it doesn't need to be wankery, but it, you know, it's just something that's a little bit more out of the safe zone, you know. Mm. But, you know, and I think a lot of it also has to do with the length. And I think you hit the nail right on the head with that. It's a little too long. And if they would have just made it a little bit more adventurous, not so safe, and made it not so long, then I think people would have, I don't know how other people are reacting, this is just my reaction, but I think I would have reacted to it better, because I probably would have wanted to listen to it more frequently, because, you know, when you leave people wanting more, I think that's a good sign.
Yeah.
And the thing with this record is sometimes I find when it's done, I'm like, okay, that was good, and I move on to something else. You know what I mean?
Yes, and I think it's a very difficult thing to pull off, because again, 38 minutes 42 for Close to the Edge, which is judged by most progressive rock fans as if not the best, then one of the top two or three albums ever created. And that was one long song and two shorter songs, but still long songs. And, you know, that absolutely did, as you say, leave you wanting more and more from the band, and it's a small, perfectly formed, small in terms of length, but perfectly formed and epic in nature record. I was interested that Fly From Here was quite a bit longer than that, 47 minutes when I looked at it. And of course, Tales is the one that people say is stuffed full of padding, which shouldn't be there. So yeah, it's fascinating, and I think we'll come back in later weeks to look at some of the songs in a lot more detail. But yeah, I think, you know, my feeling about it is that there's quite a bit of really good music in there, and it just tends to perhaps get a little bit lost. I definitely think that it's worth getting a copy and listening to and letting us know what you think of it. I think it's out beginning of February, so a couple of weeks' time, I think. But yeah, absolutely fascinating. Any final words on that, Mark?
Yeah, well, I was just going to say that I agree wholeheartedly. It's definitely worth getting, for sure. I mean, like I said, it's produced fantastically well. All the performances are done really well. The singing is magnificent on it. And I think that, you know, for just all the little nitpicking, because don't forget, me being a musician and a producer as well, you know, that's just in my nature to kind of pick things out and you know, say stuff like that. But that doesn't mean at all that it's not worth getting. And I think a lot of the general public will probably not even care about some of the things like mentioned. So I think it's definitely worth getting, and it's definitely a strong album.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I do hope that they manage to play together live, because as we've said before, maybe that will mean some, well, it would have to mean some music from different bands and different eras, perhaps. And I'd love to hear them interpret Yes songs, for example. And I do hope that they stay together and get a chance to compose more as a group. I think most of the composing in this album was down to Billy and John Davison, and it's great. And it does really encourage you when you're thinking of a new Yes album with those two involved with it. There certainly is a huge amount of energy and excitement in the record. They've clearly loved doing it, and it's, you know, for the most part, a really effective piece of composition and production and playing and everything else. So yes, I think it's a great album to have come out of the troubles that we had in 2020, and hopefully looking forward to more great things in the future.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree with that.
Brilliant. All right, for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
This is Two Pence with Mark Anthony Kay and Kevin Mulrein.
Now, we haven't done a Two Pence for quite some time, but Mark is still with me. Hello again, Mark.
Hello there, Kevin.
Right, so we have a Two Pence from Jeremy North. So he says he was having a session of listening to Yes and so on, and he fancied something uplifting. It's a good place to go, Yes, I think. So he started off with John Anderson's Change We Must. That's one of my favourite albums. And then he put on 90125 and then Talk. And he said he thinks he'll bookend it with John's Elias of Sun Hillow. So he was thinking about the feel-good factor of Yes and wondered if it would be worthy of discussion on the podcast. Definitely, yes. So, so what, off the top of your head then, Mark, because I know we haven't discussed this previously, when you think of Yes and uplifting and positive music, what do you think of first?
Well, I mean, to me personally, there are quite a few songs in their catalogue that I find very uplifting. Sure, this is, of course, personal taste, so it may not be the same for everybody. But one of them from the classic lineup for sure that I find that has always been an uplifting song to me, and it's not even a very long song, is Wondrous Stories. I always felt that song was one that always put me in a good mood and kind of, you know, put a smile on my face and helped me, you know, get through whatever I'm doing, or just, you know, putting me in that really positive frame of mind. I mean, it's you can't help but kind of feel positive, because it definitely has one of the more positive set of John Anderson lyrics that he's written.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a good one. And if I was, you know, feeling down and wanting a bit of inspiration, musical inspiration from Yes, I think I might go for something like Awaken, because, you know, the Master of Images bit and the amazing way that it's constructed, and so many times that you have dark and complex sections in Yes music and then some kind of resolution, so something like Soon as well at the end of Gates of Delirium, you know, that it has that amazing ability to lift your spirit by what it's done in the construction of the music. What else from you, Mark?
Well, another song that definitely stood out right away to me as a really uplifting song, and I'll never forget the first time I heard this song, and it immediately made me go back and listen to it 2-3 times in a row before I even continued with the rest of the record, was A New State of Mind from Open Your Eyes, the opener.
Yeah.
I love that song, and I always felt that it was a very uplifting, very, very impactful song for me. I don't know what it is. I mean, I even mentioned to Billy when I talked to him that one time when we were doing that interview together that I've always been very into that song, so much so that I even hunted down those track sheets that he posted once a long time ago on Facebook about how he tracked the song, because I just was so curious to see what he did as far as tracking that song, as I loved it so much. So that it's that song had that much impact on it for me in a positive way.
Yes, absolutely. Well, another one for me, actually a whole album, if I wanted to be uplifted, would be to put Magnification on, because I do love the orchestration in Magnification, and I think the title song is extremely uplifting, extremely positive. And it's just one of those albums I can put on and start at the beginning and go to the end, and I've just enjoyed the whole experience. I think it's put together really well, and, you know, such a shame that due to 9/11, etc., it didn't really hit anybody else's radar apart from us Yes fans. What about a whole album for you, Mark?
A whole album. Well, I mean, that's kind of tricky because there's so many great records that Yes people have done, whether it's, you know, as Yes or as solo people as well. But I definitely have to say that A Fish Out of Water for me has always been one of those records that has always put a smile on my face and has always made me scratch my head and wonder, like, how could he have just done one solo album? I mean, could you imagine if he would have gave us a couple more solo records, how good that would have been? But, you know, I'm very grateful for the one that he did. I mean, I got the, you know, that box set that came out when they reissued it on vinyl with the singles and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a fantastic record. And I venture to say that most people would probably agree that it's a very positive and uplifting record.
Yes, absolutely. And it's one of the ones that I was going to mention as well, actually. It's another one that you can put on and enjoy from start to finish. There aren't any points at which, you know, I might pause it or skip a track or anything like that. It is a fantastic piece of uplifting work. And actually, I'm going to add a final one for me, a song which always lifts me up when I'm down, and that's the first Yes piece of recorded album work, and Beyond and Before. And I love the way that starts off with Chris's bass up in the stratosphere. And I think it's astounding that's how Yes started their recorded career, with that amazing piece of bass playing and lead bass from Chris Squire, and set the tone for, you know, the following 50 odd years that we're up to now. They were absolutely convinced that they were going to do something different. And they certainly did, starting off with that. So what about a final selection of a single song from you, Mark?
Final selection. Well, I think, funny enough, that I'm going to pick a song that I know I've been hammering quite a bit throughout our sessions before, mainly because I think it's just been so overplayed. But I can't help but be honest and say that if I was to just go away from Yes music for, like, let's say a month or so, and come back and play this song, I would definitely feel that it's an uplifting and, you know, positive song. And that's I've Seen All Good People.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A classic. But, you know, it is one of those ones, isn't it, that you need to go back and listen to again, trying to put your preconceptions aside, like all the sort of war horses that have been played millions of times, even something like Roundabout. Go back and listen again and really pay attention to what's going on, and you realise just why they're so uplifting and so beautifully well-crafted. Okay, brilliant. Thank you very much indeed, Mark. Of course, put your selections on the show notes for this week of your favourite uplifting, positive Yes songs, and let's get a good list going. But for the moment, thank you very much indeed, Mark.
You're very welcome, Kevin.
This is Miguel Falcão at miguelbass.com. You are listening to the Yes Music Podcast. Established in 2011, this is Two Fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band.
Just before we go, here are half of the YMP patrons and the producers. Yes Music Podcast producers are Jeffrey Christelius, Preston Frazier, Bill Govier and Wayne Hall. And half of those patrons are Mark James Lang, Martin Kelberg, Michael O'Connor, Miguel Falcao, Neil Caffrey, Paul Hales, Paul Tomei, Paul Wilson, Lobate Scarp, Rachel Hadaway, Mark Zarkol-Bags, Robert Naser, Scott Colombo, Scott Smith, Simon Barrow, Stephen Lamb, Steve Dill, Steve Perry, Steve Rode, Steve Scott, Stephen Raw, Terence Sadler, Tim Stannard, Todd Dudley, Tony Handley, Joseph Cottrell, Keith Hoisington, William Hayes and Alan Begg. As always, continue thanks to Robert and David. So thank you very much indeed to all those patrons. If you'd like to join them in keeping the lights on here at the new and improved YMP Towers, then please head over to Patreon, patreon.com/YesMusicPodcast, or click the link on YesMusicPodcast.com. yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. We'll be back next week with an interview with someone that you definitely know. But in the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.